This is Carolyn Cromings, and welcome to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast, where we talk about everything related to contractors, construction, and information to help you run better businesses. Hey guys, this is Carolyn Cromings, and welcome back to the Quit Getting Screwed podcast. And today we have another episode in our series on lien rights in all 50 states. And today we're going to cover the state of Tennessee with the lien expert in Tennessee. Or a lien expert in Tennessee, Joshua Jenkins, with the Hagen Jenkins Law Group in Tennessee. Good morning, Joshua. How are you?
Doing well. How are you? Please call me Josh.
Josh. Okay. You know, my brother's name is Joshua. He likes Josh too, but some people like the full name. So I just want to make sure.
I get it. That's my family. You can always tell who I'm related to because they still call me Joshua.
Of course. Okay. So before we dive into the lien laws and the lien rules in Tennessee, tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got into construction law and, you know, how much fun it is today.
Sure. So I practice. I'm a partner in a firm. We've got four lawyers right now in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which is about 25, 30 miles south of Nashville. And I have been doing, I'd say, pretty much exclusively construction litigation, construction business advisement for 11 years with Mary Beth Hagen, who's my partner. And so, I mean, that varies from we represent general contractors, suppliers, subcontractors, commercial and residential. We get a lot of homeowner work here too, being in Murfreesboro. I think Rutherford County, where we're at, is one of the fastest growing counties in the state, and for sure in the state, but in the nation as well. And has been for a while. So it's just exploding. So we are blessed. We enjoy it. You know, it helps us, especially in this county of about 350,000 and then being south of Nashville, being one of the only firms we're located at to do it. Mm-hmm. So we've got extensive experience doing, we do lots of liens. I've got a bunch to go out the door today. So it's just, you know, it's something that here in Tennessee, and I'm sure in other states, is very statute driven. And so once you can get that down, it's great. But there's a lot of people out there that don't want to fool with it.
No, and you know, sometimes, you know, in going to read the statute is not very helpful for a lawyer or for a contractor, right? Today in Texas is the 15th, which the deadline for everything in Texas for liens law falls on the 15th. So my other side of my office is super busy sending out notices and making sure everything is, because it has to be at the post office on the 15th.
Okay.
So it's been, you know, it's crazy. Okay. So do you have to be a licensed contractor to do work in Tennessee?
So yes and no. It kind of varies. Okay. So there's a subset. Yeah, there's a subset. So if anything under like a small job under $3,000, you don't have to be licensed. Now, once you hit that 3,000 mark up to 25,000, there are 9 counties out of the 95 in Tennessee that require a home improvement contractor license. You have to have that. Uh-huh. And then anything over 25,000, yes, you have to have a license. Most common is general contractor license, obviously, but then there are some subcontractor trades that are also required to be licensed in Tennessee, depending on the value of work that they're doing on the project.
Gotcha. So is that done at the state level or is it all down at the county level?
It's state. We've got our contractors licensing board here in Tennessee that sets out the classifications. And then we have actually have a licensing statute in Tennessee that says who has to be licensed. And so you can clearly go and tell, like one example is roofing subcontractors. If they're doing roofing work on a project and it exceeds 25,000, they have to have a license to do it. And one of the very first portions of the statute clearly says you have to be licensed to have lien rights. So if you fall in those categories, you better have a license or you have no lien rights at all.
Okay. So say you like started doing a roof and you weren't licensed and you were required to be, and then you got like licensed in the middle of it or licensed at the end of it. Is it retroactive or did you lose your lien rights for that job?
So the statute says you have to be licensed in all phases, offering, bidding, contracting, performing the work. And so they're probably, I mean, obviously judges, it depends, but more likely they're going to say, no, you didn't get it to the middle of the project. You knew that's not okay.
And so could they recover on a breach of contract still? Like even if they didn't have a license, they could still recover on a breach of contract. They couldn't just have a lien right. Okay.
That's correct.
All right.
Yeah.
So in Tennessee, who has lien rights? What type of?
So that depends on the project. So on a residential project, only contractors in contractual privity with the owner have lien rights. So if the owner, you know, is a builder and they own the lot, well, then theoretically subcontractors could have lien rights. But the typical context is, you know, it would be the general contractor or the, you know, remodeling contractor, home improvement contractor that's contracting with the owner would have the lien rights. And it does not, you don't have to have both spouses sign off if they're married. If you have a spouse that signs a contract and the other doesn't object within a certain amount of time, well, then you still can have lien rights on that property, even though both owners didn't sign the contract.
Okay, so no subcontractors and no material suppliers that don't have an agreement directly with the owner on residential projects. And when you're saying residential, is that somebody's homestead or is that just a definition of a house?
That is up to a quad, essentially. Okay. Up to a residential unit with four units is considered residential.
Okay. If I have a house that I'm living in and like I want to get a second house, would mm-hmm. that still be considered a residence, a residential?
Considered a residential project, yes. Because even though you're going to sell it, it's still going to be a residential project.
Okay. I just want to, you know, Texas is very protective of homesteads, but if you have sure. another house, it's more treated like commercial. So I just want sure. to. Okay. So say I'm a remodel contractor. I have a contract with the owner. What do I have to send notices to have a lien?
So if it's on residential, you know, in this context, no. I mean, so I've gone round and round about this. We do when we give notice. You know, our goal is, hey, we're going to let them know that we put a lien on the property. Maybe we'll get paid. We don't have to go through the lawsuit process. But as the statute reads, you really nowhere in there does it say you have to give notice to that homeowner. You could just go and record the lien, and we run into that all the time.
So when in that situation, is there a deadline when that contractor has to file the lien?
Yeah, 1 year from completion. You've got 1 year from completion or termination of the contract. So what we typically tell our clients to be safe, hey, when was your last day to work? That's what we're going to go by. And so you've got 1 year to record your lien, but also file your lawsuit to enforce the lien. Otherwise, you lose
it. So that 1 year to enforce the lien also runs from the last day on the project or the time they file the lien?
It's concurrent. So you've got basically 1 year in within which to file, to record your lien, and to file your lawsuit to enforce it. So if you've got a client that comes to you on day 360, you've got 5 days to record and file your lawsuit.
Gotcha. And so then once you record your lien, do you have to send the owner's notice of the lien that was recorded?
No, not under the statute.
Okay.
not in this scenario, not with a general contractor directly with the owner.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. I mean, obviously, we still do things as lawyers because the whole point is to put somebody on notice so you get paid, right? We're not just filing liens to file liens. We want to file liens to get paid. Okay, so that's for residential. Oh, another question. So if you file a lien to enforce lawsuit to enforce your lien, do you get your attorney's fees?
Do not. Not unless your contract provides for it.
Okay, so if you have it on a contract basis, you can get it there.
Exactly. And, you know, and our lien law does not provide for in interest, attorney's fees, anything like that.
Gotcha.
It's strictly your cost, whatever you put into the project. That's it. That's the only thing you can lien for.
Gotcha. But so you can once you file suit, can you seek your fees back?
If there's a term in the contract or have a other basis under the statute, 'cause a lot of interplay between, I don't know if Texas has anything similar, but you know, when you get into commercial, there's other avenues where you might be able to collect some attorney's fees.
Like we sometimes use creatively declaratory judgment statute.
Mm-hmm. fees. So for instance, I know we're changing gears a little bit, but with our commercial jobs, you know, if there is a retainage being withheld or something like that, if you've not been paid and you send a what we call a prompt pay act demand, mm-hmm. in Tennessee we've got a statute where they have to pay the retainage within a certain amount of time once they receive it, and if they don't do that, then potentially, if there's not a good faith basis, you could get attorney's fees based on that.
Gotcha. Okay, so that's a good segue into commercial projects. So who has lien rights on, which I'm guessing anything but public works and residential is considered commercial?
Yes.
Right? Okay. So who has lien rights on commercial projects?
So same rules for a general contractor as residential. There's not much difference going on there. The only, I guess, caveat to that is you get for the GC, there's like a 90-day window that they can go ahead and record for priority purposes.
Okay. Gotcha.
You don't lose your lien rights, but you may lose priority.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, as far as your subs, you know, first tier and then downstream, they have lien rights, but what you have to do, you have to protect those. You have to provide a notice of non-payment, and that goes going to go to the owner, and it's going to go to whoever you have contractual privity with under that owner, GC, whatever sub, you know, that you've contracted with. Gotcha. And you have to give that. This gets a little convoluted. You have to give that within 90 days from the last day of the month in which you perform work and weren't paid.
Okay.
So theoretically, you know, it's June 15th. If I've invoiced work and I'm not paid, I have 90 days from the last day of June to give my notice of non-payment.
Gotcha.
In every month thereafter, if you've not been paid.
Gotcha. Okay, so they have to send the notice of non-payment. How does that need to be sent? Certified mail, personal delivery?
Certified mail. We've really kind of gone through. There was some litigation years ago because there's a case in Tennessee one of our colleagues had where he used FedEx instead of certified mail, and the statute said certified mail, and there was a whole lawsuit above it. And so that's I think that was back in 2017, and so the lien statute kind of got reworked in 2017, so kind of relaxed that. It used to be very strict compliance, and now it's substantial compliance. So if you can prove that they got delivery, certified mail, FedEx, that's sufficient. Email is not going to work. It's got to be actual mail.
Yep, we got the same thing. Okay, so within 90, the last day of the month, and then 90 days.
Correct.
Right? Okay. All right, so then we send our notice of non-payment. When do we have to file the lien by?
90 days after your last day of work or completion of the project.
Okay. All right, and then do we have to send notice of the lien that's filed?
Yeah, we go ahead and send same kind of deal as a notice of non-payment. We'll go ahead and send it to the owner. And then best practices, we always go and send it to, you know, if there's a lender involved, we'll go ahead and send it to whoever the lender is and give notice to everybody. But typically, you only have to give it to, same thing, the owner and then whoever you have contractual privity with.
So the GC is not technically required if you're like a sub-sub?
Correct. We usually do it, but no, it's not under the language of the statute, correct.
Gotcha. Okay. And so then commercial liens, is that the same timeline for the timeline to enforce that they have? Is it a year?
No. You got 90 days from the day you provide your notice of your lien, you've got to file that lawsuit. So on a commercial job, you know, that's one of the very first questions that we have when we have an existing or new client come in discussing a lien. We've got to know, all right, what is a commercial residential? Okay, what's your role? Are you a sub or your GC? Because your timing moves very quick when it's a supplier. And we have some pretty big, you know, subcontractors and suppliers that we do work for. And so it can move very fast depending, because your contractors, you know, like to wait to the last minute sometimes.
They don't want to file a lien and it's going to make everybody mad.
Exactly. So, and if you do not provide that notice of non-payment, you lose your lien rights. You just cannot file a lien. Yeah. Like I said, you still can sue, breach of contract, other theories, but you cannot put a lien on that property.
And I haven't found any state that is against this, but can you send notice early?
Sure. Yeah. You don't have to wait. Yeah. You just have to, as long as you do it within that time frame. Absolutely.
Because what I try to get my clients to do is like, yes, here's what your lien rights are, but what are your cash flow needs, right? Let's set up something that we're going to send notices to improve your cash flow too, not only to protect your lien rights. So,
right.
Let's see here. Okay. And so you said you had material supplier clients. What level of incorporation does Tennessee require them to prove?
So essentially what all you've got to show is that either you did deliver the materials, they were bought, you delivered them, they were incorporated. They were ordered, you took them to the property, and maybe then maybe some of it was waste. Maybe you just delivered it, but maybe they weren't incorporated. Or thirdly, you could show that you manufactured these materials or provided these materials, and they're not readily resaleable to someone else. So if it's specific to this job, then that could give rise to lien rights on the job.
So you're talking kind of about like what they're called in Texas, especially fabricated materials.
Sure.
Especially sized windows or foam that's cut different shapes. So like, so if you have specially fabricated materials, mm-hmm. and you have a lien right, even if it's not delivered, say like you fabricate the material before you get a chance to deliver it, they cancel the order and you can't really sell it to anybody else. Can you have lien mm-hmm. rights in that situation?
I have not found anything that says you can't.
Okay.
So if that makes sense. So yeah. I would say it probably just depends on how comfortable the lawyer is putting that lien down. I don't, because here in Tennessee and Texas may as well, we also have in that statute, there's almost like a penalty statute for exaggeration of a lien. Uh-huh. And then you could be responsible for any damages that result from that. Now, I don't know that that's an exaggeration of a lien.
Yeah.
You just may not have those lien rights. I mean, yeah. But I would say that probably you're going to be okay. Like you said, if it's specific for that job and then they just refuse to pay you for it, even though it hadn't been put in yet.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. And obviously it would improve your position if you're able to deliver them, even if they didn't want them.
Right.
That's kind of what I found too. Is there any type of specific lien waivers required in Tennessee, or is it just any type of?
No. So, you know, general is, you know, you'll have what we advise our clients to do, unless you've got cash in hand, is a conditional lien waiver when you're submitting your pay applications. Obviously, if you've got cash in hand, some the GCs want to get a unconditional, you know. So that's an important thing we tell all of our clients, because we just ran into an issue where they didn't pay so much attention to that and signed unconditional lien waivers, even though they hadn't gotten paid. So there goes.
And are they out of luck?
Well, as far as the lien rights, they are. Gotcha. We still reach a contract avenue because they clearly haven't been paid. But right, as far as their lien rights go, yeah, they are.
We had stuff like that. And so in 2000, we had like that kind of thing. And all the time they're making them sign unconditional. And so in 2011, Texas made the standard forms.
Nice.
For conditional, unconditional. And I actually have a case right now where the unconditionals has a very bold heading that says, if you have not been paid,
right,
conditional. And they remove that. Oh. So, I mean, my argument is that is not effective as an unconditional lien waiver because it doesn't meet the statutory requirement. So,
yeah. I mean, Tennessee's not always on the forefront of these things as far as the legislature goes. So that makes too much sense probably for them to have something like that.
No, I mean, but do you hear Virginia? They just had a law that made it illegal to have a pay when paid clause. So they're pretty cutting edge.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do have a statute that outlaws in any contract requiring a party to waive lien rights. Okay. You cannot do that here in Tennessee.
You can't pre-waiver lien rights.
No, absolutely not.
So when you see that in a contract, do you bother trying to take it out?
Yes, absolutely. I will have my client, I'll tell them, don't sign it. It's usually contractors coming from out of state.
Gotcha.
Same thing with our retainage laws. You know, you'll see them coming from, because in Tennessee, it's a maximum of 5%, but you'll see them come from other states.
That might take 10.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So we just, and that's usually never a big deal. They'll mark it out and both parties initial it. But I always try to, so, I mean, don't want to take my job away, but it trains those clients to also be looking for those things as well as they're reviewing it.
No, absolutely. Because there's some states where you can. I think like in New York, you can pre-waive your lien rights.
Wow.
In Texas, you can't. Like I said, it's different depending on the right state. All right. So tell me a little about public works projects in Tennessee. What level of project requires a bond?
So any public works project requires a bond, because we have in Tennessee, we call it the Little Miller Act, and you all may as well. So it kind of mirrors just the federal Miller Act. But so that way you can't have any liens put on a public project. So they are required to put up a bond on any type of public project. Other than that, it really depends on the parties at stake, or if they're going to require payment bonds put up to owner or performance bonds. It's more left to the parties to decide than it is the state requiring anything. So really, in Tennessee, the only projects that you actually have to put that bond up are public projects.
Okay, so let's say you're in a public project and the GC has a bond. Do you get a, where is that bond posted somewhere? How do you get a copy of that?
You can get a copy from the state. You can either do a formal request, or if you have a relationship, sometimes they'll provide it. But you know, public information, you can get it from them.
Gotcha.
It just takes a while, but fairly easy.
So under the Miller Act, it's what, 90 days after last work you have to send notice?
Yes, I believe that is correct.
Mm-hmm. Is that the same in Tennessee?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. It's been a while since we've had to do a little Miller Act claim here in Tennessee. The last one I did was on a federal job. It's been a few years ago, but it mirrors the federal statute.
Okay, so they're 90 days after last work, and I think mm-hmm. they have a year after completion of the project to file suit to enforce
right.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I think I skipped over. Oh, so I forgot to ask you, on the private projects, you said notice to the lender sometimes. Is a lender required to stop payment, or is a lender at all involved, generally speaking, in the lien process?
No. I mean, and even to the point now, courts have said you don't even have to name a lender in a lawsuit. We'll do that sometimes, because the way the statute, you know, our thinking is anybody with an interest in the property, can a court, you know, if we're saying, hey, judge, we've got a lien, we want this property sold, their rights are affected. And so does a court need them? Are they a necessary party to the lawsuit because of that? But here they've gotten away from that. So really, lenders don't show up much at all. I don't know that I've ever had a lender participate in the last few years in anything. Okay. Even we'll give them notice, but that's it. They just get notice, and I think they just probably file it away, and that's it.
You know, I try to give lenders notice from the fact that it might be another person pushing on the owner to make sure it's paid, but you know, same kind of thing.
I think that the only time you might have a lender pop up and start getting involved is when you potentially have work that predates their mortgage. And then they're going to want to start getting involved. But that does obviously happen very often.
Do they have like an affidavit of commencement that says like the project started on this date? That's what they tend to do here.
You know, no, not usually. But I mean, because you'll have, you know, some of them will go out, well, you know, I hadn't got approved yet of my mortgage, but I'm going to go out and start moving some dirt around that. And so we do have statutes that deal with that. Well, what is visible commencement? So moving dirt around is not going to be enough. You've got to actually have something going in the ground.
Have you ever tried to explain relation back to a judge?
Oh God. You know,
she looked at me like I was crazy. I'm like, no, look, it's the timeline.
Right. I know. I feel like for the most part, I've got a really good one here, or we do here in Rutherford County, that we go in front of regularly, who gets it. But for the most part, you know, here in Rutherford County, the judges that we have, a lot of them were domestic lawyers, you know, general practitioners. They're not specialized in construction. And so when you go in here, I mean, I can't imagine. I tell people all the time, I don't know why you request a jury trial on a construction matter. I mean, it's hard enough explaining it to a judge. Imagine explaining it to lay people.
Especially on a lien. No, and that's kind of one of the ways, you know, when I first started out, I was not big on arbitration, but now you get somebody that's familiar with the industry.
Yep.
And it takes half of the work out, right? Because, like, nobody understands, and I didn't realize this, like, nobody understands how the construction industry works besides people who are involved in the construction industry.
Absolutely.
And they just see, like, a lien, you're making somebody pay twice. It just seems so unfair.
Right. I know. For that purpose, I'm kind of like you. I you know, they try to pitch or have for years that, you know, arbitration is quicker, it's less expensive, and maybe it is quicker. I don't find it necessarily to be all that less expensive, but like you said, you get to select people that have experience, and sometimes that's worth every dollar.
No, yeah. I think it's way more expensive up front, but the money you save in not having to litigate for 2 years, discovery
sure.
disputes, none of that is a thing. You just, everything comes in and,
yep.
you know, I've seen in the subcontracts where they've started taking out arbitration and going back to court because I think, you know, it wasn't what they thought it was.
Right. Yeah. Parties don't want to come up with that cash. It's like they almost want to pay, you know, more over time. And I'm like, well, good luck. Cause I mean, if y'all, I'm sure y'all's dockets are as bad as ours here. It's hard to get a court date. I mean, we probably, in some of our counties, you can't, you're 20, middle of 2022 right now.
I know. We have trials setting for 23 right now. Oh. I mean, we were already in Houston. We were already backed up because of Harvey. I mean, and that took years off our life. And then we're sharing the courthouse with the criminal courthouse and then COVID. And yeah. It just become hard to get anything decided. All right. So did I forget anything as far as bonds and liens?
I don't think so. I think we kind of covered everything. Yeah.
Doesn't seem too complicated. That's good.
No, it's fairly straightforward. I think when you see the statute, people, you know, attorneys just get intimidated. They don't like, oh, I don't touch that.
I know. Yeah. I know. I remember when I was, starting for out first and liens, I was looking for any kind of resource that would tell me what the hell does this mean?
Right. Just now, I will say, you know, kind of one thing that we didn't touch on is right, lease spaces, rental spaces.
Okay.
So in Tennessee, you can have a lien on a leasehold. It is limited only to that renter's interest unless you can show basically that, for lack of a better term, they were agent of the owner. Yeah. So the statute has about four or five factors that you can work through in determining, and if you meet those factors, then you can actually attach that lien to the property. And some of them are, you know, does the owner get to retain whatever was put in? Are they the ones kind of saying, hey, this is how we're going to do it, even though the tenant's the one paying for it? Those type of factors. So if you can show those, or you can't, you don't have the absence of those, then you can lien the property itself.
So what I normally do is I'll send out an intent to lien if it's a leasehold, and I'll say, hey, send me your lease so I can determine if I have a lien on the leasehold or the fee over the whole property. And they won't, and I'll tell them in there, well, if I don't get it, I'm just going to assume I have a lien
right
on the fee simple on the whole property. I mean, I can always partially release it, but if you're not, they don't ever want to give up their lease. I mean, because as a sub or a material supplier, you don't know, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't know when you're doing it.
No, because I just... Here's our risk, you know. And so, let me ask you this. What have you seen a lien claimant get punished for doing it incorrectly?
I have seen judges rule that maybe the lien was invalid after the fact.
Gotcha.
The only time that you're probably going to run into actually getting punished is exaggeration of liens, you know, leaning for... I mean, intently, it's an intent kind of language in the statute. Like, you know what your amount is, and you're just intentionally leaning for an exaggerated amount to kind of force their hand.
Gotcha.
You know, you're going to get punished for that. You know, we did have, I guess it was probably 2 or 3 years ago, we had a state legislator push through the legislature a statute that was well-intentioned to design and designed to protect homeowners, but it provided that if they're in a, when the lien dispute, if the court finds that the lien basically was invalid, and the homeowner prevails, then they can recover up to 10% of the home's value.
Damn.
As a penalty against the contractor. And it was awful. I mean, it was just, nobody wanted to put a lien down, you know, nobody wanted to do anything. So that quickly got repealed. And so it's no longer in effect, but I mean, it was,
that's substantial.
It was, and it was, it just stems from, you know, we've had a lot of issue, I know here, with these fraudulent liens being put down, ironically enough, by sovereign folks been claiming to be sovereign citizens and things like that. And putting these liens on property, and it was really affecting homeowners. And so that was the intent behind it, but it just had a desperate
way impact. Broader effect.
Yeah, it was awful.
Yeah, I gotcha. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on. So if somebody wanted to reach out to you, we'll put all your information in the show notes, but what's the best way for them to reach out if they have questions about Tennessee liens or Tennessee construction law?
Absolutely. So our web address is haganlg.com, and that's H-A-G-A-N. So you can go there, get our number 615-546-4070, or shoot me an email. It's really easy, josh@haganlg.com. Happy to answer any questions that anybody may have.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Josh. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Uh-huh. All right. Thank you for listening to this episode of Quit Getting Screwed. I hope you found it helpful. If you like what you hear, please like us and follow our podcast. If you want further information, you can find us at subcontractorinstitute.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. And the book is available on Amazon. Thank you.